Hello and welcome to Web3 Delight podcast. My name is Teša Tešanović and I will be your host today. Web3 is not about technology. This is a social movement towards transparency, consensus, inclusiveness, ownership and openness. To that end, we'll explore different elements of Web3 with our guests and learn from their journeys. When you read a lot of studies about the future of work and the future of the IT sector, there is a huge problem with the skill gap. One of the things that you have been working on is improving the developer education journey. How do we build a good model for the Web3 education?
Sure, it's an excellent question. And you know what? It's important. And the reason it's personally important to me is not just because in my profession, it's important that I explain to people how great, you know, technologies like Algorand are, and indeed, of course, to foster adoption, how to use them. But instead, it's also because I, when I was younger, really struggled in school, I guess not because I wasn't a reasonably okay student, but rather because I just didn't enjoy the school environment and I didn't have a lot of friends. And so it was, for me, something I had to spend a lot of time learning on my own, right? In my own time, self-taught. You know, learning as an adult and also cross-training skills is something that's personally important to me. And so to answer your question, I think it's about making information accessible. I can tell you, I'm the CTO at the Algorand Foundation, and over the last decade, I've spent most of my career working in either software engineering, software architecture, or applied cryptography, and that's building things with cryptographic primitives. And it's been at times quite an uphill struggle in terms of trying to understand things, especially in the world of cryptography, which is really the intersection of mathematics, engineering, computer science. And so the reason that it was so tough is because it really is the case that information is sometimes, for certain subjects, very inaccessible, very difficult to digest, and not in a form that folks are able to assimilate. And so for me, the most important thing we can do to make Web3 more accessible, more inclusive, and easier for everyone to be part of is to make the information easy, to make the path that people are on obvious and well-trodden. And that what I mean by that is when folks go to your website to learn about your Web3 project or your technology, you've got to make sure that there's a blessed path on the website so that when people get there in search of information, that they are brought on rails through the information in the right order, in a coherent manner, so that it delivers to them a story around your technology. Also, I think the world has kind of transitioned away from long form content. I'm, you know, nearly 40 years old, and when I was in my 20s and in university, lectures were an hour and a half, 2 hours long. I think these days folks learn in a different way. They learn in kind of bite-sized chunks of content. And so whether or not it's something like Coursera or Udemy, where you go on, you do like 12, 15, 20 minute modules and you learn in a segmented fashion like that, or whether it's video content directly on websites like YouTube, I think we have to break the material up in a coherent way that brings people on the journey. And then finally, I would say that to make the Web3 experience complete, even when you give folks that theory, okay, that I spoke about, when you give them the tuition and the structure around how to do things the right way, and you give them the fundamentals that they need to understand what they're building, you also need to give them tools that lets them play with the technology and lets them understand the technology and understand the development path. And so that's why at Algorand, one of the key things we did strategically this year was release AlgoKit. AlgoKit is the name of a product that we've created, and the product is really to enable developers to build quickly. And so it's a complete framework for Web2 developers and Web3 developers to be able to expedite the build on Algorand, to be able to understand the primitives, and to be able to build, test, and deploy in the easiest way possible with the greatest user experience.
One of the problems is that there is a certain gap. Just a second, my microphone. Okay, sorry.
Of course.
The connection. Okay. One of the problems is that there is a certain gap with what is offered in university courses and what is asked in a market that is rapidly developing. In the case of blockchain, there is very little, almost to none, knowledge of blockchain development in most of the university courses related to coding and IT engineering.
Sure. Yeah, I know there isn't a ton there. Also, the same is true for applied cryptography and some other disciplines. For example, some areas of machine learning and AI and deep learning and neural networks and stuff like that is also maybe not well covered in undergrad form. So this is in primary, when you're doing a primary degree. I think that the universities, of course, have to work on that. As in that vein, by the way, in that line of thinking, the Algorand Foundation is working with universities. So we have a number of university programs. They all have kind of three-letter acronyms. One is ABC, the other one is ACE. But ultimately, whether or not it's our university programs, where we do directly work with universities to educate them so that they can educate young people, or whether it's the work we're doing in developing countries like India, where, for example, there are millions of young people who are interested in technology, and technology is very core to the culture over there at this point. We have people on the ground who are working with professors and universities to try to bring Algorand, and I think more broadly, because it can't just all be about Algorand, we have to teach a broad curriculum. Also, you know, to bring in not just Algorand, but also the broader understanding of what it is to build applications that are going to be executed in a distributed context, i.e., you know, distributed systems engineering, the idea of decentralized applications and how they're different to normal applications that you would run on macOS or Windows or a normal computing environment. And so it's something that we have to do to be part of the university programs. But, you know, the universities, of course, have a part to play on their own. And I think that they will eventually catch up. But whenever you have, you know, a major change in terms of technology, same thing happened, by the way, when I was coming out of university around the dot-com boom, right? It was a time when universities didn't really have great courses in terms of Web 2 stuff. They didn't have great courses in terms of computer engineering either. And so eventually they caught up, you know?
One of the key points about the Algorand blockchain is that it's carbon negative. Yeah. Blockchain technology has a lot of negative reputation because of the proof of work that is used by Bitcoin.
Yeah, it does. And so here's, you know, there's different ways to think about this. I'll focus on Algorand just for a moment because, of course, it's my profession. But I want to give also just some broader color on this. So Algorand is about as energy efficient as one can get for a large global network. And so Algorand has processed billions of transactions in the mainnet. Okay, when I say mainnet, I mean in the global production network. It's processed billions of dollars. It's had zero downtime. So it's been running nonstop for nearly 4 years. And it's done all of that using about 80 kilowatts of instantaneous energy. And so for folks who are listening who may not be electrical engineers, you know, a watt is a unit of power. You get wattage by multiplying volts times your current. And so just to put 80 kilowatts in perspective, what does that look like in real world? The answer is about six or seven showers, electric showers that are working. Or a simpler example maybe to digest is, it's kind of the amount of electricity that's used by an electric car when it's charging. And so, as you can imagine, if you bought a Tesla or another electric vehicle and you were charging it at your home, on the street, you'd be pretty pleased with your energy efficiency. Okay, you'd be thinking, okay, I'm doing good for the planet here. And so the entirety of Algorand is running on what is the energy that's used by a single charging Tesla vehicle. And so it really is, in terms of the value it delivers, in terms of the global economic impact it can have and the economic and electronic freedoms that it brings, it really is very, very, very green and very power efficient. So much so that we can even afford, as a foundation, to offset the carbon emissions of those 80 kilowatts of instantaneous use for the year. Every year we buy the carbon credits from projects that produce carbon credits. And we try to do so in a sustainable way by purchasing those carbon credits from projects that are not just from countries who have spare carbon credits, but rather from projects that plant trees and create cheap, renewable energy from wind and solar and things like that. So we're very conscious of pollution and our carbon footprint. I will say as well, though, you know, although I would say it's absolutely without debate that Algorand is delivering value for the energy it uses, I think, you know, proof of work, it has a very bad rep. I'm not sure if it deserves such a bad rep. I know, of course, Bitcoin, people would say, well, it's very wasteful. But of course, it depends on the value that it brings. And, you know, just to remind people, whether it's iron ore or euro or US dollars or Hong Kong dollars or Russian rubles or anything else, all of these fiat currencies globally, they have, of course, a cost to them, and they consume energy and carbon. So, you know, the thing is that, you know, of course, there's always an energy cost to things. And I think folks would be surprised if they looked at the G10 currencies, or they looked at the major Middle East currencies, and they looked at how much energy they use. I think people would be surprised by that number as well.
So blockchain isn't the only thing that can get unsustainable.
Exactly. Of course, minting coins and real world coins that are in your pocket jangling around, creating notes, making sure there's no counterfeiting, delivering all of those currencies, running the global banking system, all of the interbank settlement, the automatic clearinghouses, the central banks around Europe, all the central banks in across all of the different countries in the world, these things have a massive power consumption and a massive carbon footprint, of course. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that I don't really villainize Bitcoin that much, but certainly if you look at Algorand as a pure proof of stake blockchain, it basically has zero impact on the world energy use.
And when you take a look at the model that Algorand used to have such a low carbon footprint, could that be a way forward in building a more sustainable internet?
So it's an interesting question. The consensus model that Algorand uses is based around this technology by our founder, whose name is Silvio Macali. And Silvio, Mr. Macali, is an Italian gentleman who is a world-renowned cryptographer and computer scientist. And he has produced a number of different things in his career, and he's won awards for the work that he's done globally. And so one of his creations is a mathematical cryptographic primitive called the VRF. And VRF stands for Verifiable Random Function. And so, of course, it's very technical and quite difficult to explain verbally. But effectively, it's a deterministic but probabilistic function that can output a signature and a uniform a string of uniform bytes. And what this lets us do is it lets us go around the entire network and select people to engage in consensus and produce blocks and validate blocks and process transactions in a way where ahead of time, we can't tell who will be picked next. That's the probabilistic bit. But when they're picked, we can have them cryptographically attest to their right to be picked. And that's the deterministic bit. So that's why I said probabilistic, but deterministic. So what this means is we can randomly pick people from the sea of people who are out there engaging in consensus to produce and validate blocks in a way that we can be sure they had the right to do so, but also that we can't find out who's going to be next by running any algorithm. And so this is an incredibly powerful primitive that he's created. It's used in many different places, not just on Algorand, but it's the heart of the Algorand consensus. And it's very energy efficient. You can run this on a wristwatch, right? You can run it on an Apple Watch. It's very, very, very energy efficient. And computers can run it millions of times in seconds. And so this technology, can it be used for a more sustainable, broader internet? It doesn't help with the propagation of data, so it's not going to help in that sense. But what you could see happen is, for example, technologies like Algorand being used for microtransactions. And maybe that's an element of sustainability. As an example, you might have artists out there or bloggers or writers or authors who are unable to sustain themselves and would otherwise not be able to produce the content that everyone enjoys and that the content that they produce. And they can be sustained by technologies like Algorand, where folks can send them fractions of a penny for near zero cost, and in a kind of a crowdfunding way that those folks can be sustained by these technologies. So I think indirectly, things like Algorand, things like the VRF can help create a sustainable economy on the internet. But of course, Algorand itself doesn't help with data propagation or hosting of data on the internet.